Hello, my name's Tom Boone.
And I'm Joanna Bailey.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest news from the world of commercial aviation. Here's what we have for you this week.
Coming up today, I'll take a look at the record-breaking weekend travel in the USA, while Tom reflects on an interesting chat with Air Astana CEO Peter Foster.
Joe will see why a 13-hour Lufthansa flight took almost 22 hours, while I look at flying across the Air Astana fleet.
Finally, I'll explore the innovative way one Asian airline plans to cut carbon emissions.
So now you know what's in store, let's get on with the show. And Joe, 4th of July is always busy in the US, isn't it?
It is indeed. Independence Day weekend is one of the busiest travel days in the calendar for US airlines. So, you know, they were expecting a busy weekend, but it was so busy, in fact, it broke the record for the most number of people ever screened at airports in the US ever, in all of aviation's history. So June the 30th was confirmed by the TSA to be the busiest day in the history of US aviation. It passed the previous record, which was held by a Sunday after Thanksgiving in 2019. And in all, the USTSA screened 2,883,595 passengers.
Wow, that's a lot of people. Say that 10 times quickly.
So this passed the 2019 peak by just 680 passengers. So just a couple of planefuls of people there. But it did pass the record, and it is the busiest day. And it's a great sign that aviation is back after the pandemic. And in fact, that peak was reached even though around 2,000 fewer flights were actually taking off during the weekend than there were in 2019. So in terms of the busiest airports, the largest hubs for the largest airlines saw the most activity on the day. According to data from Cirium, SkyTeam member Delta Airlines saw 843 departures from Atlanta on June the 30th. Oneworld carrier American Airlines and its primary hub at Dallas-Fort Worth had 818 departures, but it also had 625 departures from its other big hub at Charlotte. Being less concentrated at a single hub, Star Alliance Airline United had 479 departures from Chicago, 460 from Denver, 438 from Houston, and 406 from Newark. So good stuff, but not everything went as smoothly as it could have done.
Tell me more.
Extreme weather warnings hit the airline operations again over the weekend, so much so you'll have seen on social media lots of people coining the term flightmare. Very innovative. So there were storms threatening swathes of the eastern US, while the south and the west were baking in a heat wave. More than 4,750 flights across the country were hit by delays this Monday, while 874 were cancelled, according to FlightAware. United Airlines, which of course was still recovering from its operational meltdown last week, well, you'll remember it had more than 5,000 delays and cancellations in the week leading up to Independence Day. And notably, we saw its CEO was opting to fly private instead of risking all the chaos at airports. Anyway, despite all its efforts, United remained the carrier worst affected by all the delays on Monday and accounted for more than 300 of the cancelled or delayed flights. So good times and bad in the States, I guess.
Yeah, I can imagine. That doesn't sound good at all, but I'm glad I wasn't flying in the States.
I feel like people are getting used to sleeping on airport floors these days. And not just the passengers either. Lucas ran a lovely story on how it affects the crews, you know, when they time out and they end up having to stay in crew rooms or sleep on airport floors. You know, so do have a read of that on Simple Flying, because it's important to remember it's not just us paying passengers that are disrupted.
Mm. Well, talking of disruption and paying passengers, I was not a paying passenger or disrupted last week, which was quite fun because I got the chance to fly out to Kazakhstan, of all places, to meet with Air Astana's CEO, Peter Foster, who regular listeners will know that we've chatted to quite a bit in the past, but never met face to face. So this was really like a aviation bucket list item of mine because, you know, Air Astana is one of my favorite carriers, even though I never flew on them. But now I have. But we'll talk about that more later. But first, I wanted to just dive into a bit of what Peter Foster told me, because we had a really interesting chat. Started off as a bit of a round table and then went one-to-one. I think one of the most interesting stories or to take away was what's going on with the A320 family, Neo family fleet. And that's because, you know, we've talked on several times on the podcast by this point about the Pratt & Whitney engines. And, you know, a lot of CEOs have said a lot of similar things on it. And we got a sort of similar comment from Peter when I brought this up. But what was quite interesting was that, you know, people like AirBaltic, they've got tens of planes grounded because of this. And some have been really badly hit. Well, actually, you know, Air Astana's doing quite well at this moment in time. They've only got two aircraft which are currently grounded, and that is a FlyAir Astana A320 and an Air Astana A320. And we saw them on the ground as we landed in Almaty, which was quite cool. But you know, it was at a max of six, so they've gone down to two. So it's better than they were, and it's not a bad place to be. But the thing that Peter did tell me on that is that it could easily go wrong tomorrow, and that's a quote. You know, because June, that right now they are busier than ever. While some of the other airlines in the region are still kind of catching up, these guys are having their busiest June of all time. But, you know, he said it could very easily be that a couple of other engines then need to go into maintenance, and that could really impact the summer schedule that's planned. Next thing we chatted about was, as you're well aware, there's some 787 Dreamliners on the cards for 2025, which is quite exciting because I think it was back in 2013 that the airline first ordered the 787-8. What I found quite interesting is obviously they are now in a lease agreement for 787-9s, which is the larger one. So Peter mentioned that they're not actually going to take the Dash 8 at all now. And each time they take a Dash 9, their Dash 8 order will be reduced. One other interesting thing, though, is the 767s, because, you know, they are operating the world's youngest passenger 767s. They were the last ones off the production line at Boeing. But, you know, they look like they're going to be retired fairly early in their career. The reason for that really boils down to not wanting to have too many sub-fleets, because obviously for each aircraft type you've got, you need pilots with different ratings, you need mechanics who can deal with different aircraft, and then you need to build up a big stockpile of spare parts for different aircraft. And obviously these parts cost money, even though they may just be sat in a warehouse. So it's not ideal. So it was quite interesting because he told me, you know, flat out, we will sell them. He said they've been super aircraft and they've done a great job for us, but because they configured them nicely. But he said, this is the one thing I would disagree with him about. He said the interiors are getting a bit tired, so we're not going to do much with them other than maintain them. I'll talk a bit more about it later, but I don't think, at least in the business class section, the interiors are tired. You know, I did ask because last time we spoke, I think it was early 2022, because we were talking about Russia. So early 2022, we spoke and we had a webinar with Peter. And at the time, he was telling me they were considering converting them to freighters. But he told me this time that is definitely off of the tables, just because of the cost and the time it takes. And he also, what was quite interesting, he mentioned because of the size of the containers and pallets that the 767 takes aren't standard. They're not greatly loved by freight forwarders. That's being said, though, it's not only the 767 that's going to be saying bye-bye to Air Astana. You may remember that they are also operating the E190E2. I remember in Paris a couple of weeks ago, Embraer was kind of showing a picture of how they had aircraft or E2 aircraft all over the world, and Asia was pretty much just Air Astana. But it seems like that's not going to be the case moving forward, because he also mentioned that the E2s are going to leave the fleet and be replaced by outstanding A320 lease orders. Because I say lease orders because they haven't got any on direct order, but they have about 20 outstanding. It's quite interesting, though, because I looked at the numbers. They've got five E2s right now. How old do you reckon they are?
Three.
So they range between 3 and 5 years old.
Okay.
But they're already looking to get rid of these. Peter told Air Finance Journal on this, we no longer need the E2. We got the E2s before the low-cost airline, FlyAristan. Then we realized you don't have to go into a small market with a small plane. You can go in with an A320 with 180 seats and just price it accordingly. So that's really the reason we're getting rid of the E2s. Now, obviously, you know, fair enough, it is a smaller aircraft, but you might remember as well in December 2020 until May 21, the planes were grounded because of some avionics issues that led to some legal wording between Embraer and Air Astana. But apparently that is all now all solved to everyone's satisfaction. But it's be interesting to see where these E2s go next, I think.
It will. It's a shame they're not continuing with them. But I guess if it doesn't work for them, it doesn't work for them. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of airlines waiting to snap up those aircraft.
I just hope whoever takes it keeps the Snow Leopard.
It's very cool. It would be a shame to see that put in the bin. But tell me more about their planes in a minute, because
I will.
Right now I'm going to talk about your other favourite airline. I thought you weren't going to do it today, so I'd do it. Lufthansa has had a rather tricky flight, which diverted not once but twice and ended up with the 13-hour flight taking almost 23 hours. So a bit of a disaster for the passengers on board. So it was a long-haul flight operated by the airline's Boeing 747-8, Lufthansa flight LH511. It's a daily non-stop scheduled service between Buenos Aires and Frankfurt. The flight has a departure time of 16:45 and takes 12 to 13 hours to reach Frankfurt. But on June 27th, the Boeing 747-8 took off from Buenos Aires but had to turn around and divert to Natal Airport in Brazil due to a medical emergency on board. So we haven't heard any details about the medical emergency. I mean, not really our business, to be fair, but obviously this was somebody that needed to be back on the ground to be dealt with rather quickly. So it was around 5 hours into its flight along its routine flight path when it had to divert. And after this unscheduled stop at Natal, the jumbo jet again departed towards Europe, but had to cut its flight short again. Now, this involved a diversion to Paris Charles de Gaulle Airport because the crew ran out of duty time and the airline had to arrange a crew change. So this is the problem with long-haul flights when you've got this really long journey planned out. You know, you've got your crew working probably to the extremes of their crew duty limits anyway. And then if you have something like this going on, you've got to change the crew. It's a requirement. So a statement from the airline said Lufthansa flight LH511, a daily scheduled flight from Buenos Aires to Frankfurt, was diverted to Natal due to a medical emergency with one of the passengers on board requiring medical attention upon landing. The flight again departed from Natal and headed to Frankfurt via Paris for a crew change. So, you know, this, I think, really demonstrates the challenge with flying such long routes. And we've actually seen this before. There was a recent example from India when a London to Delhi Air India flight had to divert to Jaipur due to poor weather. But the pilot then refused to continue the flight to Delhi and was kind of reported to have walked off and left the passengers abandoned. But what actually happened was, you know, he came to the end of his flight duty time limitations and he could not fly the plane. So it wasn't quite how the media portrayed it.
Situations, it's just you've really got to tell people what's happening rather than just let it look bad.
Yeah, I guess some pilots are better communicators than others. I'm sure most ATC would agree with us on that. But there is some better news from Lufthansa. I'm sure you want to hear this, Tom, because the A380 is going to more places. It's restarted its A380 operations to New York. It hasn't been in JFK for more than 3 years. So it landed for the first time back on the 4th of July, very appropriate for a big celebratory day. And it's already started flights to Boston last month. It's also adding the A380 on flights to Los Angeles and Bangkok for this winter. So plenty of super jumbo action for the end of the year from Lufthansa.
I wish I could fly on the Lufthansa A380, but you know, if you're listening, send it to Almaty, because I would jump on that flight in a heartbeat. And the reason why I say that is because, as we talked, I spent the last week in Kazakhstan. But, you know, the really interesting thing about it was I didn't just fly to Astana and back, two flights done. You know, I actually pretty much went around all of Kazakhstan, which meant I had seven flights in total. And I think it was kind of a coincidence, but this meant that I got to fly pretty much every aircraft or every aircraft type in the Air Astana fleet. So, you know, it was Boeing 767 to Frankfurt to Astana. And then I had the A320, I think maybe the CEO from Astana to Almaty, and then the NEO Almaty to Astana, and then going to... Astana to Aktau was the 321LR. And then from Aktau to Almaty, I had the E2 and then another A320 and the 767. So I thought I'd briefly, because people seem to like hearing about flights, so I thought I'd briefly delve into this. So starting with the 767, you know, this was the highlight for me, obviously. And I mean, life, flat business, how can it not be the highlight? But as I said, you know, I don't think the aircraft were tired at all. So in the business class cabin, you've got a 1-2-1 layout in the 767. But what's really interesting is that the seats are staggered. So it's kind of a situation of somebody else's feet are in your table, which means, you know, row one, you've got the window, then the seat, and then the table, and then the aisle. Row two, you've got the window, the table, the seat, the aisle, et cetera, et cetera. I always had one of the window seats with the table in between the aisle. And I would say, you know, if you can get that, go for it. I started in 5A on the way out and went 1A on the way back. And 1A, you know, I thought it would be a bit more cramped because it had the bulkhead, but actually there was way more space. So that's another little tip. In terms of the service on board, you know, it was quite impressive. We had a menu with four options on both directions. So I went for, on the way out, a cordon bleu. Sounds like something that could be really easily botched on an aircraft, but it was surprisingly juicy and tasty. But just the number of courses was staggering because, you know, you've got a starter with a salad, and then they came with garlic bread, and then you've got your main, and then they offered you a dessert, and do you want a cheese plate, and then have a chocolate, and let's have a tea or a coffee, you know. But the service that was so attentive, to put it into perspective, you know, they came around with blankets on the night flight. And I said to them, like, oh, I just want to finish my movie. Can you come back in 20 minutes? And, you know, I'm not going to name other carriers' names, but most carriers you would expect to just kind of get forgotten, or, you know, they'd come back after half hour or so. The flight attendant was back at my seat with a duvet 20 minutes on the dot. You know, it just shows how attentive they are. In terms of the domestic 320 services, this also blew me away because, you know, on the 1 hour 20 or so hop between Almaty and Astana, I did that flight three times in the end. Every time I got a coffee, a soft drink, a hot sandwich, you know, in economy on a short flight, which just blows me away because it was kind of comparable to what you get in business class on Lufthansa on a similarly lengthed flight. You know, so I just found that amazing. What was even more amazing, though, was I had a domestic 3 hour hop, again in economy, and there you got a full meal, you know, with a hot meal, a piece of bread, a little salad. On a domestic flight, you know, I'm so unused to having this in Europe. I'm so used to just having a water and maybe you can pay for a sandwich. So this was quite impressive to me. And then, of course, there was the E2. And I don't want to upset anyone here. So I apologize now if you're listening, Guy. But actually, for me, the E2 was the worst of the bunch. I just didn't love it so much. It did have its bonuses. Like, you could tell it was really quiet in the cabin and all of this, but I just found it a little bit cramped, you know.
Hmm.
Maybe partly it's because I had the curtain in front of me.
Maybe.
I don't know. But it wasn't my favorite of the bunch.
Especially, I guess it depends a little bit where you're sat as well, you know. Yeah. I mean, if you've got a middle seat on an A320 or a pair of seats where the seat next to you is empty on an E2, I know which one I'd rather go for.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, saying that, I think I would rather go for the A320 middle seat, because I did that in a bulkhead and there was so much space. It was lovely. But you know, it wasn't for me so much, but, you know, it wasn't a bad flight, you know. To put it into perspective, it was like there were three good flights and you have to put them in an order, you know. So someone has to go at the bottom somewhere. But, you know, it was pleasant enough. And, yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to Air Astana as well for making it all happen and everything they did for us last week.
I'm glad you had a good time. And I think Kazakhstan is definitely on my list now of places I'd like to go.
Well, you know, I would definitely say give it a go, because it's not somewhere that I ever really, I think, would have visited without going to see Air Astana. But it is an amazing country.
Is it? That's so really good to hear. And I want to talk now about another Asian airline, but rather at the other end of Asia, because this is all about Japan Airlines, who has found a rather unusual way to reduce its carbon emissions. And it all centres around reducing weight on board. Now, this is obviously something that lots of airlines are aiming to do. We've seen trolley services being removed. We've seen onboard magazines being taken away. Of course, there's loads of innovations in seats to make them lighter as well. But this is something a bit different, because Japan Airlines wants passengers to bring less luggage. How's it going to do that? Well, it's teamed up with one of Japan's largest corporations, Sumitomo, to offer a clothing rental service for visitors to the country. The service is called Anywhere Anywhere. So it's anywhere, as in wear clothes, anywhere. So as in anywhere in the world. It makes sense when you see it written down. And it's to encourage passengers to pack lighter, thereby reducing the airline's fuel consumption and, of course, the associated carbon emissions. So from kind of now, passengers will be able to use Anywhere Anywhere website to pre-book their clothing rental service. They provide information on their flight, their clothing size, how long they're going to be staying, and the season that they're visiting in. And they've got to do all this at least a month in advance. And then the clothes are packed up and sent directly to the passengers' accommodation on the day that they arrive. So I think this is quite ingenious, really, and it's quite affordable as well. So renting costs between about $28 and $48, depending on how many items you want. And you can rent up to 8 outfits for as long as 2 weeks. And as well as the online reservation service, there's Sumito is also overseeing procurement, laundry and delivery of the clothes. And they're working with a dry cleaning company called Hayashoka and a clothing provider called WeFabric. So it's a trial at the moment, but it's quite a long trial. It's going to be running until August 2024. If it proves to be a success, Sumitomo may look at rolling it out to other oneworld carriers, which could be interesting, because you've got lots of those flying into Japan: American Airlines, British Airways, Cathay Pacific, Malaysia Airlines, and they could obviously offer this very similar service to all passengers of those airlines too. Well, how much of a difference is it going to make if you're not taking as many clothes on your trip? Well, even small amounts of weight can make a difference. I will throw you back to when Tom actually weighed a High Life magazine so that he could accurately calculate. Do you remember that?
Yeah, we must link to that in this podcast description, because that was so ridiculous that I went to that effort.
This was about British Airways taking High Life off their planes to save weight. So Tom actually weighed the magazine to see how much they'd be removing and then multiplied it up by the number of seats and the number of flights. Anyway, he came up with a very good carbon number. Thankfully, Japan Airlines has done this for us, because they said that every kilogram of weight taken out of a flight between Tokyo and New York reduces carbon emissions by 0.75 kilograms. That might not sound like a lot in isolation, but if you consider, you know, there's 200 or 300 people sitting on this flight, 200 or 300 bags in the hold. If you can reduce it by multiple kilos, then that could be a good thing. For me, I just think it's like taking the stress out of travel if you know that there's going to be some awesome, nice new clothes waiting for you at your hotel in Japan. Then you don't have to, you just pack your hand luggage, don't you? You don't have to worry about all your clothes. But I am quite fussy with what I wear, and I don't think, I'm not sure that the Japanese style would really suit me, but you never know. I'd love to go.
Give it a go once.
I'd love to try it for sure.
This was the other thing on my trip, you know, a lot of people on the trip packed hand baggage only, and I was just like, you know, I'm going for a week, I'll take a suitcase. And then I had such a big suitcase that I was like, okay, you know, I had basically a different set of clothes for the whole week depending on what the weather would be. You know, it was quite nerve-wracking because I had two connecting flights. And I was kind of wondering, is it going to make it? But you know, we got there in the end.
That's good. Well, do let us know on the comments if you would consider flying all the way to Japan with no clothes at all in the hope that Sumitomo could fit you out. I think it's an interesting
concept. I would do anything
concept.
Once for simple flying.
Yeah, we'll just tell them that you're a girl and you're a size 6. Anyway, that's enough nonsense. I think we've run out of time on this particular podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and we welcome your feedback at editorial@simpleflying.com.
For more great content, you can visit our website at simpleflying.com or find us on social media. Simply search for Simple Flying.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a rating on your favourite podcast player. Thanks for listening.
Bye.